sahana vavatu sahana bhunaktu sahaviryam karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay, page 12. Srila Sukadeva Goswami continued. By means of that fire, Pururava, who desired to go to the planet where Urvasi resided, performed a sacrifice by which he satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the enjoyer of the results of sacrifice. Right, so he did this sacrifice. It was all done in relationship to the Lord. But we can see from the previous verses that his consciousness was not about the Lord. Right? That's the difference. So one has to do these things in connection with Vishnu. The Vedic doesn't have any other method. It's like pleasing Vishnu, then you get whatever else you want. But the point is that he was going for something else. Right? Like that. Yes.
Even though he was going for something else, he achieved what he wanted.
Yes. Because you approach the Lord, you get what you want. You're finding that's not working.
I didn't try.
Oh, you didn't try. Okay, so we get back to us.
Let us know how it goes.
Okay. Thus he worshipped the Lord, who is beyond the perception of the senses and is the reservoir of all the demigods. In Satyayuga, the first millennium, all the Vedic mantras were included in one mantra, pranava, the root of all Vedic mantras. In other words, the Atharva Veda alone was the source of all Vedic knowledge.
Why Atharva?
Atharva, because that's everything together. It means, Atharva is the undivided Veda. Mm-hmm. It means you have, after division, then whatever's left is Atharva. In other words, you have the Atharva Veda, which is means the whole thing. It's not the Atharva Veda, you just have the Atharva, right? Yeah, no, it says Atharva Veda. So now, if you remove from there all the hymns, or the riks, and put them in one place, that's called the Rig Veda. Or, right? Then if you take out all the prose parts and put them in one place, that's called the Yajurveda. And if you take out all the songs and put them in one place, that's the Samaveda. And then whatever's left just stays as the Atharva Veda. So in other words, the Atharva Veda originally would have been what's the Atharva now plus the other three.
So yeah. So when modern scholars they say Atharva Veda, they're talking about the last part. I
mean, yeah, they're only talking about. Yeah. Generally, when we say Atharva, we mean after they've been separated by the Vyasadeva. Because otherwise, if they're all together and all mixed in wherever they go, then the focused intelligence it would take to study the whole thing, and then from that, no. So Krishna says, but we see in this, why are they separated? So that we can get more essential. Because Krishna says, of the Vedas, he is the Rig, Yajur, and Sama. Mm. Right? And of those three, he's the Sama. Mm. Right? So before, they're within, but then he compiles it so that they're separated so we can see them. But otherwise, all the hymns are Riks. So that's the Rig Veda. Does that make sense? All the Samans, that's the Sama Veda. And all the prose, that's the Yajur. So it's not that when they're all together as Atharva, that it's not understood what's what. It's just that it makes it easier if you separate it. Right? Just like the original music, then you see Bharat Muni talks about the jatis. There's 18 jatis. So the jatis are just a group of notes, but then how you can use those notes and all that, you get all the ragas from that. The difficulty is that it's very difficult to know the subtleties of how that works, because with these 18 you're getting everything. with the same, many times with the same notes. So to make it easier so people could understand, therefore Nard Muni then defined it as ragas and raginis. So you have the six ragas and they each have six raginis, so in this way you end up with 42 raga raginis. Right? Then you have the combinations like that, you get the putras, putris, and all these different things like that. In this way then the whole thing comes. It makes it so it's much more systematized. So in the same way as Vyasadeva simply systematized it so we could understand it. Does that make sense? Otherwise before, just by Omkara, then they could understand everything. Because if they understand the Lord, the living entities, his internal potency, their pastimes and the place of pastimes, you understand that, you understand everything. But that's all in Omkara. Right? So then because we're not understanding all that, therefore everything else is expanded so we can appreciate it. Is that
So when we've separated and what's left is called a Tara, is, as I remember it, that's like secondary things, more practical things.
How to make a chariot fly a swan airplane. You know what mantras are for that. Yeah, like that. Mm-hmm. I would say is that most people when they want to get into scientific, they look at that one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that Parayalinga is all Omkara, as you explained just previously.
Yes. It means everything's in Omkara. Means if you have the Lord and you have his energies and their interaction, then you have everything. So it's just a matter of how far down you come, you get to what point. So at one point in that, there's logic. But it means that you're saying something, presenting something that actually represents what you want to, what you're thinking something. There's a method that you can use words to express what it is you're thinking. Right? So then in that, then we see in Ayurveda, then it mentions the process of, you know, logic, because that's considered healthy. Because the Ayurveda is not just a physical, it's also mental and intellectual health. Right? So by using logic as a presentation, that will actually maintain the proper health of the subtle body. Right? So then that's all those details are given there. Gotama then, you know, made it into a philosophy. You know, so since it's so important, it's made into its own area. But otherwise, Ayurveda describes it also, right? Yeah. So it's just natural is that the words you're using actually mean what you say. So that means then how those words go, how you can combine them, what it is you want to say. So that's why then the grammar is what it is. Means because what you're going to talk about, you're going to talk about interaction. So that means the verb is the central point in any discussion. Then the point is someone's doing something connected to something else, or at least someone's existing. Like we say, Krishna is swimming, right? So it's not directed at something, so there's a subject and the existence of the subject, right? So then Krishna, then swimming, I mean is the verb. I think by English grammar they'd say it's swimming, but it's not. It's is the verb. Then he's existing in a state of swimming because nothing's being accomplished. It's not going anywhere. It's not directed anywhere. If he says Krishna swims to the other bank of the Jamuna, now it's that then swimming is the verb, and then the bank is the object, and he's the subject. You understand? So grammar's there to exactly express. Does that make sense? So these are all the things what you want to do then, what you'll gain by that expression, what was the reason that you're saying this, you know, where's the place it is that you're saying this, and then it, you know, then there's that. So these are the centered around the verb, these are the six main nouns. Then there's another 18 that are considered secondary, that deal with finer things and other stuff like that. So by using that, then you can exactly say what you want to say. you know, and the flavor you want to say, the mood you want to say. So then the logic is just how to progress a thought so that it actually is clear. But, you know, it's just like you get these ones where someone asks a question and they go on this whole thing around and like this and down here and then comes back over here and then around and then comes like this and then they forget what they're talking about. And they never actually get to their nose. So that's because there's no logic used. But if someone says, you know, this is their question, this is the doubt, this is what they want to know, then they explain it, then that works a whole lot better. Because in the whole time I'm giving the whole background, trying to, you know, soften things up and that, I don't know what's happening. So I have no context and I keep guessing, this comes, oh, you need this, and I go that, and that. And so then that's why it's not used. Means, you know, non-logic. But logic is this is what you want, this is exactly the reason, and this is, you know, why, you know, your explanation of why this works and not what someone else says. Then that gives rise to, based on their point, then you can make your point and then explain. Is that in a sense? So it's just, naturally it's part of the whole thing. So all the 14 books would be contained within the Omkara. Like that. So that's why then it's very nicely, that, you know, Vyasadeva makes it a little more accessible for us.
Right. And for that we are thankful.
Yes. Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Do we see practical? I mean, it's just like, let's say you want to take health. Okay, so what's health? Health will mean that combination between the living entity, his particular body, and that the field of action that's there, that there's a proper balance there. Where's the potencies from that come? Right? Because that's then the material energy. That comes from the primary energy and the Lord. Right? And so then there must be an action in that. So again, we see we're just, you know, dealing with, and so then there's going to be a place, you may have to adjust particular things that you do, all these things, so we're just dealing with all elements of the Omkara, right? But in consideration of health. You know, you could take any topic and then get that same thing. It's going to be a branch of any of those. Right? So that's why the Dasamul, then it says that Krishna has, you know, all the, so many energies, like that. Yeah, so we see is that that's all that's described. That Sambandha Gyan is only describing, what do you call it? Is only describing A, U, and M. Right? And then Abhideya and Prayojana, then they're being described in the Chandra Bindu. So it's just, the Dasamul is that's the technical points that are areas of that. Then from there, you can break it down into everything else. So that's where it'll start. So just as in the Upanishads, previously great sages could take that and then by contemplation could end up and understand everything. Right? But because we're a little bit not as great and not as sagacious, so therefore, then Vyasadeva kindly then wrote Vedanta Sutra, and Krishna gave Bhagavad Gita. So then from that we can understand the essence of the Upanishads. And then even that was pointed out, that's not clear enough, so then Srimad Bhagavatam was then compiled. Then we're able to actually, because all it is this is explaining what Vedanta Sutra is explaining, which is what the Upanishads are explaining. That's why our acharyas have no problem taking any of these points and taking them back to some verse of the Upanishads. Like that. In other words, the Atharva Veda alone was the source of all Vedic knowledge. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, was the only worshipable deity. There was no recommendation for worship of the demigods. Fire was one only, and the only order of life in human society was known as Hamsa. Right? So there was only one fire. Now we deal with 18 fires. Right? There's only one fire, just the fire you'd use for worshiping the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the one, at least, that Acharyas gave us, that we're just directly worshiping the deity, not something specific, that's Vaishnava Agni. Right? And all the other ones, then they may have their place for a particular samskar, a particular different ritual like that. Then you have the different... So, yeah. Oh, Maharaj Parikit. So Hamsa means that they understood the difference between matter and spirit and could function on that platform. Paramahamsa means then you're functioning on that platform in connection with the Lord as a devotee. But you can be on that same liberated platform not being a devotee, then you're a Hamsa. So if we just say Hamsa, that means everybody's Hamsa. And then of those, the devotees are Paramahamsas.
Hamsa means the ability to separate the milk from the water.
Yes, right? Like that. Or it means that they're devotees, but they're not to the Paramahamsa place. Mm-hmm. Yes. O Maharaj Parikit, at the beginning of Treta Yuga, King Puru Rava inaugurated a Karmakanda sacrifice. Thus, Puru Rava, who considered the yagyic fire as the sun, was able to go to Gandharva Loka as he desired. Mm. Conclusion.
The Supreme Personality of Gadnarayana was the only worshipable deity then. And now...
Same, but it means the demigods and everything else has been brought out. It's not that it's not all there in the Veda, it's just that no one's interested in all that. So, but now it's been brought out, all the brahmanas are, all these different things are compiled, so that then one can know how to perform all these activities to get all these particular benefits. You know, you want to use it in a particular way to get a particular benefit. There's a particular yajna that uses that methodology. Right. You know, it's like if you want to get potatoes as a preparation, you use potatoes as the, you know, ingredients. You know, straightforward. So the yajna, whatever you want, then you use those ingredients to get there. Does that make sense? So the brahmanas, they'll explain all those different, how to use the different ingredients in different ways to get different results. Yeah. So before that, they didn't have to do that. They just... worship Vishnu and Hari Bol. That's why it says the golden age of Lord Chaitanya. So what does that mean? Golden age doesn't mean everyone will start getting taller and stuff like that. And, you know, a guy sitting in the temple chanting really seriously and then he's starting to get bigger and like that. And so, no, that one says it means that there's only worship of the deity. There's only worship of Krishna as the deity. There's nothing else. So it's all about Vaishnava Dharma, Sad Dharma. That's the golden age. So when you have a predominance of people, or many, enough people, Prabhupada said, I think it was 1% of the population, if they practiced seriously, you know, Krishna consciousness, the whole place would turn into Vaikuntha.
Okay. A little bit more to do.
Yeah. Conclusion. Unless women are trained to be chaste and faithful to their husbands, there cannot be peace or prosperity in society. Right? Because you're trying to create a stableness. That's the whole idea. When there's regulation, there's stableness. And when there's stableness, then you're going to be able to tell the difference between matter and spirit and focus on the spiritual, perform your duties, lose that taste in those things like this. Right? Because this is, it's just like, let's say you have something you really like. You eat that every day, you start to, it becomes ordinary. That's the whole idea of the Vedic culture, is you regulate all the things that are important to you on the material platform so that they're regularly there, but at the same, not too much, not too often, not too far apart. And so that's what the regulation is given. And then it won't overtake. You'll still be able to maintain your proper consciousness. Then you'll lose the taste of the material and gain the taste for the spiritual. So it's a scientific process. So the main thing is when you're dealing with the material platform, you're dealing with family life, which means you're dealing with women. Right? Because family life means women. Right? You get a bunch of guys around, it's not family life. Like that. Question, if you can't even call it life, you know, I mean, they're pretty grungy, you know. They should take a bath, you know, it's like that.
Maharaj?
Yes.
I have a question regarding the Omkar.
The Omkar.
like that's the reason, because the pranava is the root of all Vedic mantras. That is the reason why we have the Sapta Yoga mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It was preceded by the
yes.
This reason.
Means Om is the beginning of all mantras. You start all mantras with Om. Hare Krishna is the only one that it's independent. It's not dependent on a bija to work. All the other mantras without a bija, they won't work. The Vedic mantras, the Pancha, these kind of mantras, they won't work without a bija. Right? But the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that will work without a bija. That's why it's independent. That's the original. But all others, then they require. So that's why the Omkar is. Yes. Okay, so the reason, because women as a class are merciless and cunning. So unless they're trying to be chaste and you're functioning in that way, then there's no way that to make everything run peacefully. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Because that, okay. Tara was married to Brihaspati, and therefore, as a chaste woman, she should have been impregnated by him. But instead, she preferred to be impregnated by Soma, the moon god, and therefore she was unchaste. Right? It's not that she was taken by Soma, it's that having been taken by Soma, then she found that, you know, he was a nice guy. So then she got impregnated by him, rather than, you know, saying, forget it, and then, you know, it wouldn't have... Does that make sense? He may have captured, but he wouldn't keep capturing her. If she had just walked out, then... But instead, okay. And therefore she was unchaste. King Puru Rava was greatly attached to Urvasi, yet despite his faithfulness to her, she had left him. Right? So it's just showing that's the nature. From Urvasi, you can say, it's from one end to, you know, Tara, who's the wife of one of the demigods. So she's a demigoddess herself. So we're just seeing the, you know, the range there. Because otherwise we would take it that the nature then is, oh, only about, you know, untrained women or like this. No, this is just the nature. And with training, then you can control this. Right? Does that make sense? Just like, let's say you have a horse. Right? Horses, untrained, they're wild. They run around as they like. But if you train them, then they can do so many amazing things. Right? And so only that can be given up if we take up Krishna consciousness. Then these lower characters, they go away because of Krishna consciousness. So the idea is someone who's trained will be interested in Krishna consciousness. Because otherwise, without training, there's too much distraction. We won't be interested in Krishna consciousness. So that's the whole purpose of this. It's not that we're chastity and faithfulness is the major thing. No, devotion to Krishna is the main thing. But if one can be chaste and faithful, it means we can be chaste and faithful to Krishna. Because it's all these things are principle. If we accept authority, then that includes up to Krishna. If we have authority issues, we have issues with Krishna also. We can say, no, it's different. But then, why is there sometimes questioning about what Prabhupada says? We need to change that. We need to adjust it. Do we need to actually follow this? Or that's not actually what we're supposed to... What does that mean? That is authority issues. That's it. It's not being practical, being intelligent, being all these nice things. We just come up with nice ways to cover the lack of faith. Lack of faith in authority. Because otherwise, this is what it says, this is what we do. That's all. It's straightforward. But we don't like that. No, but what about, you know, what about us? What about, you know, then it's about us. It's not about Krishna. You can use your intelligence to understand it, get a deeper, like that. The better you understand it, the better it works. Krishna makes that point. That's where you say, not blind following. We know why we're doing it. You know, that's the point. But it's thought that, no, if you don't, then there's freedom. Just like I remember explanation at the time, would it have been? I'm not sure. It might have been. It was one of the brahmacharis in the temple. Might have been uninitiated, maybe first initiated. I think most likely uninitiated. So he is out preaching. And then some guy comes up who's smoking. And when they talk, then he says, you know, I'm free. I can smoke. You're restricted. You can't smoke. And then the devotee says, no, actually, it's the other way around. I could smoke, but I've decided not to smoke. And you say you're free to smoke, but you can't stop smoking, so you have to smoke. So I'm free. You're the one that's restricted. You know, completely blows the guy's mind. But, you know, and so I said, you know, but as I say, there's a new bhakta, so it's not like that. So that's what the Vedic culture is about. That's why it's called the regulative principles of freedom. But the mode of ignorance tries to take those regulative principles and say, oh, you're not free. Oh, that's archaic. We're modern. We're free. We're open. We're this. We're broad-minded. We're liberal. No, it just means that all we have to do is, all those nice words, all we have to do is replace that with, I'm attached, or I'm in the mode of ignorance, you know, like that. I'm untrained. But, you know, doesn't sound as good. You don't want to put that on your resume like that. Wouldn't go. Wouldn't work out very good.
Animal.
Hmm? I'm an animal, yes. Yeah. Or no better than an animal. Give it a little bit more, you know, finesse.
Nice. Yeah. Rolls off the tongue.
Also, it makes it more specific, because sometimes you can also say, yeah, he's a real animal. Yeah, so then it's like, sounds good. You know? So, oh, he says he's an animal. Okay, very dynamic. Okay. Urvasi frankly explained the nature of a woman. Because women are easily seduced, the Manu Samhita enjoins that they should not be given freedom. A woman must also be protected. Must always be protected either by her father, by her husband, or by her elderly son. If women are given freedom to mingle with men like equals, which they now claim to be, they cannot keep their propriety. The nature of a woman is to establish false friendship with someone and then seek new male companions, one after another, even if this means giving up the company of a sincere well-wisher. Unless elevated to spiritual consciousness, everyone is conditioned and fallen. What to speak of women who are less intelligent than men? Right? So we take up Krishna consciousness, that brings us to that transcendental platform. Then all these anomalies, these aren't a problem. But if one leaves Krishna consciousness, then they're immediately the problem again. Because these are inherent. That's the whole point. You have fire, you control it. Now, let us say, okay, we have a fireplace, and we have fire. Okay? Now, of that, the fireplace is the place in which fire can burn and actually be of benefit. If you just, you know, light your sofa on fire, it makes for a problem. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Pretty quickly develops into.
Yeah, it's kind of everything gets lost. So, I'm just thinking of alternative meanings of that. So, therefore, in the fireplace, the fire, then you can do, you can cook, you can heat, you can do so many things. They create a pleasant environment. This is what it means, because it says women are fire. Therefore, the man, the father, the husband, or the son creates that environment of the fireplace. That's protection. If we say, no, we can just do what we want, that's saying, you know, just light the fire anywhere in the house. Yeah. So that's the point. Because you can say, oh, the cupboards will burn. Yeah, they will. But do you want the cupboards to burn? Does that make sense? Yeah. That's what's meant by this. So it's a very practical point. But because of the modern words, I mean, your modern political positions are all based on taking words and then taking them and doing something with the words, because there's no substance to what's being said. So all they can do is argue over words. So therefore, many of these words can be taken out of the context of what they're saying. But they're just saying is that it should be controlled. Now, of the two, which is more, what is nicer, right? It's the fire. You can say, oh, we come into the house, nice fireplace, but if there's no fire, what's the point? You know, nice granite and nice carved and really old-fashioned, like that. But the point is unless there's a fire, there, what's the meaning?
Decoration.
Decoration, yeah.
But kind of stupid.
Hmm?
But kind of stupid.
Stupid, yeah. Yeah, and then nowadays you have those false ones, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, they just brick them up, yeah. And it just looks like it's just a place to hang things and that. Yeah, so that's... Oh, really? Wow.
And they put a radiator in front of it.
Yeah.
Oh, come on. But can you still throw the glasses and they'll break? Or? But they'll come back onto the floor.
Metal,
yeah, so it's
so
not good.
Just bounce back.
Yeah, so it's not good. You have to be able to break and stay inside.
But it looks good. That's not practical for the wedding.
Yeah. But that's the whole point. It's just like you're saying the house is not a home until there's a woman involved, right? So that's the whole point. You have the fireplace that doesn't have meaning until there's a fire there. So, but that's the whole point. But it has to be contained within that fireplace. If it goes outside of that, it's trouble. Therefore, that original point of chaste and faithful. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea. That's what's being made. Because we're saying, technically, that the women are the power. So if it gets out of line, it creates havoc. Like that. And you can say, oh, but let the women be powerful. But what happens when two fires come in contact with each other? They both go out. So that doesn't work either. Yes?
This last line here. The nature of women is to establish false friendship and so on.
That's not the last line. The last line is what to speak of women who are less intelligent.
The last sentence.
That is the last sentence.
So... I'm a little bit willing.
It means, are you on page 13? Are you on a page that all there is one sentence and a lot of, it looks like that. Very blank. Okay, so this is the last sentence. So you mean the sentence before the last sentence.
So, as far as I have seen, this could pretty well also describe a man. So I don't know, what is the...
Yes, but what kind of man?
The one which the women should be protected from. No?
But in the context of what we've been studying, right? Are we talking... Because here it mentions... where is it... Where was that one? The one that was always met. Yeah. The nature of a woman as personally described by Urvasi. So we have to take her as authority. Mm. Right? She's, you would say, as far as society girls go, she is the best in the universe. Not just you know, this year she won, you know. I mean, she is way leagues ahead of the other, because Indra's court is filled with tons of society girls. But, you know, all these apsaras and everything like that, but without her there, then it's like it's as if it's empty. That kind of class. Does that make sense? Okay. So she's saying the nature of woman is to establish false friendship with someone and then seek new male companions one after another, even if this means giving up the company of a sincere well-wisher. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yes. So that is the nature of women.
Yeah.
Okay? That's on its own. You can train, and then this will, you'll get rid of this. Or at least you can control this, so it's workable. Right? You know, it's just like the other day, one devotee was saying that he went to medical school, and part of the training was is they had to go for, I think it was 6 months, they had to spend some time in a psych ward. You know, going there and seeing that was part of the training is how to deal with the medicines and the people and all that, and then going there and, you know, what they know of the theory and everything like that. So he ride down there on the train, spend the day there, do his work, and then in the evening ride back to his house. So after some time, when he knew more and more about the psychology, as he was riding on the train, he saw all the exact same symptoms of the people in the insane asylum on everybody on the train. It means everybody was crazy, but the difference is the ones in the insane asylum were the ones that couldn't control it. Mm-hmm. While the ones on the train are the ones that could keep it in check, so it wouldn't go beyond. right? Does that make sense? I guess that's why they think why Czechs are considered head cases, right? But they're able to keep it in check.
Like
it's in check. Right, you know, so.
It's awesome. Okay.
Like that.
Women are all the time complaining about these things about men. So,
but why would you? How could you complain about something that you don't see? It's just like this. If you're a good cook, then do you notice if others are not good cooks?
Yes, of course.
Yes. What if you can't cook to save your life? Do you ever notice that other people can't cook? That was a
selective,
selective hearing, guys. Very Freudian, that one. That was, yeah. The only thing missing was the blinking of the eye. You can't see something that you don't have. So you're saying all women complain about this. That means all women have this, because not all men complain about this.
Okay, now it's starting to make sense.
Yes. Okay, yeah. So a training, that's controlled. That's what we're talking about. That's the meaning of that. We were saying, giving the example of the fireplace. It's controlled. But if it's, no, I can do what I like, then, you know, hey, you know, it's a nice rug. It's one of those long-haired shag rugs. Hey, I'm into that. And then from there it goes over to the couch and over to the chair and then off to the kitchen and, you know, it gets down to the bedroom. And bathroom's not much to burn in there, but, you know, like that. You can melt a few, you know, the curtain or something like that. Does that make sense? So that's just the way, so that's the idea is if it's not, then that's what will happen. That's what she's saying. You know, because she being a society girl, she doesn't have to control it as much. It's just part. In other words, functioning on that lower feminine level, in that capacity, as mentality, that's part of being a society girl, right? But she's refined and cultured and all that, so the presentation of it will be very nice. Does that make sense? So. Then those, the women who are trained, then they try to keep this in check. But if, unless they want it to be, it won't happen. You know, as I said before, the women are more clever than men, so the men can't control them if they don't want to be controlled. Right? So that's the whole point. Okay. Chapter 15, Parasuram, the Lord's warrior incarnation. Pratigya. The Kshatriyas must govern the world in accordance with the rules and regulations enacted by great brahmanas and saintly persons. Because as soon as the ruling class becomes irresponsible in regard to the religious principles, it becomes a burden on the earth. It didn't say irresponsible in management. It says irresponsible in the religious principles. So, this whole idea is that I can be a manager and just worry about the management and not worry about actually the proper way in which it's supposed to be done as given by the scripture or by given, you know, what Prabhupada's given us, what we've learned. Then that is irresponsible. That becomes a burden on the earth. Right? Does that make sense? Because in the Vedas, there's only one book on management. Right? And one book, it means there's, how you say, the direct management, there's a few, but they're very short. Then you have Arthashastra, all those Niti Shastras. Arthashastra then shows how you're going to organize it. Dharma Shastra is going to be the higher. So in other words, you could say in this way, Dharma is your strategy, Artha is your operational, and Niti is your tactical. Right? So like that, then you have the whole thing. So it's very straightforward. Everyone's been using it since time immemorial. Works perfectly. Modern, they have to keep coming with newer and newer because they don't use these. And therefore, because it is a burden, which burden bothers you, you come up with a system that gets rid of that burden, but it creates another burden. And so then someone will say, oh, but they're intolerant of that burden, and then they come up with this. So as long as the intolerance of the burden is not very great, it's considered a great managerial system. But as soon as then that becomes a disturbance, then a new system comes up to address that, but then it creates a problem somewhere else, which at the present time is not a problem. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you had the old math, but the kids are getting bored. So then they make the new math, which is more fun for the kids. And so everyone says, this is great, this is fabulous, until they figured out that after 20 years, nobody learned any math. Right? They had fun, but they didn't learn any math. So then they have to, again, you know, like that. It's just on and on. Therefore, in previous times, when the ruling class was degraded to the modes of passion and ignorance, right? Didn't say they were bad managers, so they were degraded to the mode of passion and ignorance. Right? The Brahmanas, headed by such a Kshatriya spirit Brahman as Parasurama, killed them 21 consecutive times. Also, we see from modern history that monarchies have been abolished by various revolutions. But although monarchies, overpowered by the modes of passion and ignorance, have been abolished in the world, the inhabitants of the world are still unhappy, for although the qualities of the former monarchs were degraded by taints of ignorance, these monarchs have been replaced by men of the mercantile and worker class, whose qualities are even more degraded. So that's what we're saying. Unless it's based on the religious principles, whatever you replace it with, it'll just be worse. I think this saying is out of the frying pan into the fire. Right? Like that. Not so good. Hence, when the government is actually guided by Brahmanas or God-conscious men, then there can be real happiness for the people. Chapter 15 summarizes questions and answers. Maharsh Parikit asked Sukadev Goswami question 9.6 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 9.6 from 9.15.16. What was the offense that the Kshatriyas, who could not control their senses, committed before Lord Parasuram, the incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for which the Lord annihilated the Kshatriya dynasty again and again? Srila Sukadev Goswami gives a reply to question 4.6 in chapters 15 and 16. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes the history of Gaudi in the dynasty of Ayla. From the womb of Urvasi came six sons named Ayu, Shutayu, Satyayu, Raya, Jaya, and Vijaya. Okay. The son of Shutayu was Vasuman. The son of Satyayu was Shutanjaya. The son of Raya was Eka. And the son of Jaya was Amita. And the son of Vijaya was Bhima. Bhima's son was named Kanchana. The son of Kanchana was Hotraka. And the son of Hotraka was Janu, who was celebrated for having drunk all the water of the Ganges in one sip. Right? So that's the Janu Dweep and Janavi, like this. One sip, right? It's not that he was like gagging on it. It just, and then just went back to his meditation. Like that. That can be really unnerving, right? The descendants of Janu, one after another, were Puru, Balaka, Ajaka, Kusha. The sons of Kusha were Kushambu, Tanaya, Vasu, and Kushanabha. From Kushambu came Gaudi, who had a daughter named Satyavati. Satyavati married Richika Muni after the Muni contributed a substantial dowry. And from the womb of Satyavati by Richika Muni, Jamadagni was born. The son of Jamadagni was Rama, or Parasuram. When a king named Kartavirya stole Jamadagni's desire cow, Parasuram, who was ascertained by learned experts to be a Shaktivesh avatar, incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, killed Kartavirya Arjuna. Later, he annihilated the Kshatriya dynasty 21 times. After Parasuram killed Kartavirya Arjuna, Jamadagni told him that killing a king is sinful and that as a Brahmin he should have tolerated the offense. Therefore, Jamadagni advised Parasuram to atone for his sin by traveling to various holy places. Right? Because the king means killing a Kshatriya is less than killing a Brahmin, but killing a king, right? That means the one who's actually ruling is actually, in one sense, greater because so many Brahmins are being protected. So much Dharma is being protected, right? The cows, the women, everybody's being protected because the king's rule. That means a proper king. If he's a dacoit, you know, like a, what is it, Kali Raj, in the dress of a king, then you know, it's like killing a Shudra. But like this, then it's actually considered 10 times greater. Like that.
It's like the beginning of the Brihadbhagavatamrita. You have the Brahmana, but then the southern king is considered higher.
In that, but between the two, when, if there, it's just talking about in killing, because of, he will protect so much. But as far as etiquette, the Brahmin will still be higher than the Kshatriya.
So but, Shringi had a problem with the curse. Shringi's father had a problem with the curse that Shringi gave for Kshatriya.
Yes, because so many, now you're saying that he behaved badly, but he is protecting the people. So now they'll be without a protector. So then, didn't work out. Parashurama's mother. It hasn't come up yet. It is coming. I say future attraction.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned, yes. Shlokanasharanam, verses 1 through 14. The dynasty of Ila, Puru Rava. And verses 15 to 41. Parashuram kills Kartavirya Arjuna. Verses 1 to 14, the dynasty of Ila, Puru Rava. Srila Sukadeva Goswami said, O king, from the womb of Urvasi, six sons were generated by Puru Rava. Their names were Ayu, Shrutayu, Satyayu, Raya, Vijaya, and Jaya. The son of Shrutayu was Vasuman. The son of Satyayu, Shrutanjaya. The son of Raya, Eka. The son of Jaya, Amita. The son of Vijaya, Bhima. The son of Bhima was Kanchana. The son of Kanchana was Hotraka. And the son of Hotraka was Janu, who drank all the water of the Ganges in one sip. The son of Janu was Puru. The son of Puru was Balaka. The son of Balaka was Ajaka. And the son of Ajaka was Kusha. Kusha has four sons named Kushambu, Tanaya, Vasu, and Kushanabha. The son of Kushambu was Gadi. King Gadi had a daughter named Satyavati, whom a Brahmin sage named Richika requested from the king to be his wife. King Gadi, however, regarded Richika as an unfit husband for his daughter, and therefore he told the Brahmana, My dear sir, I belong to the dynasty of Kusha. Because we are aristocratic Kshatriyas, you have to give some dowry for my daughter. Right? So some kings then practice this, though it's not a standard thing. But it was more, like you said, it was an aristocratic element. It wasn't actually a standard, because in Manu, then the selling of the daughter, you know, for the dowry is considered an asuric marriage. That's what the asuras do. They do this, right? So they want the daughter, so they pay big money, like this. So it's not recommended. It's one of the four that's not recommended to use at all. But, you know, in other yugas it could be used, but generally it's not recommended. So Kshatriyas generally wouldn't use it. But they could. So they would have some families that it was more of an aristocratic thing to show that their standard, that someone had to give big dowry to actually be connected with their family. You know, so like you mentioned here. So we see also when Bhishma Dev went to get wives for he kidnapped them, but that was for Pandu. Then Madri, when he went there, then he came, and that was, who was that? Shalya. I think it was Shalya. He went to visit him. And so then, you know, he mentioned that, he said that he thinks that the match between Madri and Pandu will be, you know, perfect. So then it was mentioned that, you know, our custom that we have, you have to give dowry. And he says, yes, I know. And he brought some huge. So it's more of a prestige thing here. It's not actually that the family's trying to get some benefit, like it'll be used in modern times where they want to get benefit from that. So therefore, you know, the bigger the dowry, the better. But here it's just a matter of, it's a prestigious thing amongst themselves. It's a social thing, but not so many practice it, but you do see some do. So here's a family that's the practice. And so he's using it because he's expecting that Richika, being a Brahmana, you know, and most likely he's thinking he's very poor and very austere. You know, it'd be like, what was his name? Saubari, right? Comes in and, now this is not cool, right? You know, so they try to find some excuse, and then they just come back and completely overwhelm them. So, like that. So they forget the Brahma Tejas, you know. Therefore, bring at least 1,000 horses, each as brilliant as moonshine, and each having one black ear, whether right or left. So at least he wasn't being too specific. He was being more liberal there. You know, that was the, like that. Brilliant as moonshine. So that means they were kind of like see-through, or...
Would be
usually
pretty cool.
When you have moonshine, you're not very brilliant.
You're not very brilliant, yeah. Okay. When King Gaudi made this demand, the great sage Richika could understand the king's mind. Therefore, he went to the demigod Varuna and brought from him 1,000 horses that Gaudi had demanded. After delivering these horses, the sage married the king's beautiful daughter. Right. So, in at least he can go to Varuna and get these things. So it's like, you know, he can't be unqualified. Right? Yeah, you don't want to. They don't want to mess with this guy. Right? Thereafter, Richika Muni's wife and mother-in-law, each desiring a son, requested the Muni to prepare an oblation. Thus, Richika Muni prepared one oblation for his wife with a Brahmana mantra and another for his mother-in-law with a Kshatriya mantra. Right? So he being a priest, and they both wanted children, so then he performed the sacrifice for that. And he performed the oblation, one for each. So his mother-in-law being a Kshatriya, then it was with a Kshatriya mantra, and his wife being now a Brahmana with a Brahman mantra. Because she had married a Brahman, so now she functions as a Brahman. Then he went out to bathe. Meanwhile, because Satyavati's mother thought that the oblation prepared for her daughter, Richika's wife, must be better, she asked her daughter for that oblation, right? Because he figured the husband will make a better one, so she'll get a better. She didn't understand. That's why you don't get involved in these things. Right? You leave ashram stuff to the ashram and varna stuff to the varna, right? Satyavati therefore gave her own oblation to her mother and ate her mother's oblation herself. Footnote 7. Srila Prabhupada writes to verse 9, a husband naturally has some affection for his wife. Therefore, Satyavati's mother thought that the oblation prepared for Satyavati by the sage Richika must have been better than her own oblation. In Richika's absence, the mother took the better oblation from Satyavati and ate it. She didn't understand. It's a different one. He, you know, he being a Brahmin, he made it proper for everybody.
Maharaj?
Yes.
This shows that women are less intelligent.
Yes, less intelligent, and also the aspect before of the social prestige and things like that.
But it's from the family, her husband was the same.
Yes, but the same, but point is that they take on the same nature, so the equal nature. So that's the point, is they become similar mentality. And nowadays you don't see it as much. But I remember when I first came to India, husband and wives, they looked like twins. Like that. They always look like, they always look the same. Somehow or another.
It has been said that with submission and service to the husband, the woman takes the appearance of the husband.
Yes. That I ask about it, that they didn't start looking like that, just with time they would.
Yeah, with time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like that. So it's an old practice. So, like you say, she took on that. So he was also, you know, less intelligent, she took on that nature also. Since it was inherent, it was easy to do.
Okay. Clever to figure out.
Huh?
Clever to figure out.
Yes, clever to figure out, but too clever. This is too clever. Because she would look at it that that's what you do, but she didn't understand that it was okay. If it was two Kshatriyas, then yes, that one would be better than the other. Then, okay, it has some meaning. But because you're doing the Brahman, because she was just thinking, my daughter's a Kshatriya, I'm a Kshatriya, but so like that. She didn't catch that, no, he would prepare for his daughter as a Brahman and his mother-in-law as a Kshatriya. When that great sage Richika returned home after bathing and understood what had happened in his absence, he said to his wife, Satyavati, you have done a great wrong. Your son will be a fierce Kshatriya, able to punish everyone, and your brother will be a learned scholar in spiritual science. Right? So neither is going to be overly pleased with this. Right? Because, the mother-in-law would want a son who's a great king, can take on the kingdom, but he'll be a great pundit who's not going to be interested. Yeah. Right, so you know their so-called better didn't work out. That's the lesson. Yeah, Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 10. A Brahman is highly qualified when he can control his senses and mind. when he is a learned scholar in spiritual science, and when he is tolerant and forgiving. A kshatriya, however, is highly qualified when he is fierce in giving punishment to wrongdoers. These qualities are stated in Bhagavad Gita 18:42 and 43. Because Satyavati, instead of eating her own oblation, had eaten that which was meant for her mother, she would give birth to a son imbued with the kshatriya spirit. This was undesirable. The son of a brahmana is generally expected to become a brahmana. But if such a son becomes fierce like a kshatriya, he's designated according to the description of the four varnas in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarnyam Mayashrishtam Gunakarma Vibhagashaha. Bhagavad Gita 4:13. If the son of a brahman does not become like a brahman, he may be called a kshatriya, vaishya, or shudra, according to his qualification. The basic principle for dividing society is not a person's birth, but his qualities and actions. So even see here in the Vedic, they'll be divided by their actions, not by their birth, but not by their birth.
Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur brings out this point in his Brahman and Kshatriya, Brahman and Vaishnava. As how it's not the body that's the Brahman.
Oh, and he uses this example of Parasara. Yeah, so this is the way it's done. So how someone acts, that's then how they'll be situated. That's the kind of activity they should do, the kind of service they should do. Like that, because then they'll do that nicely. Well, if they try to do something else because it's more prestigious or seem to give better, material results or things like that, it won't work out. It'll just be a disturbance to society. Yes?
Is there a specific reason why he's kind of blaming his wife and he doesn't, because it wasn't the wife's really purpose, it was the mother's? So why is he like playing
with
and he doesn't talk to the mother
anymore? And what is his control of the who can technically blame the mother-in-law?
Her husband.
So even if you wanted to follow that, he would have to go to the king and then tell him, and then he would have to. So his wife is, because she didn't have to agree, she agreed. She could have just said, no, my husband made it this way, this should be the way it is. But the mother insisted and she agreed, so. But he's just pointing out that it's not going to be good. You're going to end up with a son will be a fierce kshatriya, able to punish everyone. And your brother will be the nice guy. Otherwise, your son would have been the nice guy and your brother would have been a fierce kshatriya. Better. So he's just pointing out that's the way it is. I say.
Yes. What are the main qualities that will signify the spirit of different varnas?
Yeah, Gita and these verses then explain. 18:42-43. Like that. So you see, so this that Brahmins and Kshatriyas will be by specific qualities, Vaishyas and Shudras it'll be by specific skills.
Vaishyas and Shudras you see by skill.
Yeah. Because you can be a total demon and be a fabulous businessman. Mm.
Can be a demon, also be a kshatriya.
No, then you're a demon. Because unless you protect the people, but how can you protect the people unless you have good qualities? But you can make, at the point of the vaishyas, to make profit. Right?
We also hear how Duryodhana people appreciate him, even when he's a demon.
But those qualities that Gita mentions, he had all those. He just wasn't a devotee. Does that make sense? They're specific qualities. It's not like he's great at Nintendo or something. He's a kshatriya, so. What is it?
PlayStation,
but I'm sorry. Grand Theft Auto.
Means you can have those qualities and not be a devotee.
Yes. So that's what I'm saying. But the kings, they have to have those qualities. So the Vaishya, as long as he can make profit, then it works. He can't break laws. That's another thing. But the point is because it says he has to lead in economics. So that means he has to make money. Then he has to take care of who works for him. He has to pay his taxes. He has to give charity to the Brahmins. He does that, then he's rightly situated. But the kshatriya, unless he has those qualities, he can't do kshatriya work. You know, because you can say, well, what about to do business? You have to have qualities. You have some guy there telling, oh, this is family, this is great. Oh, no, please, you know, my mother's dying. You know, they have a million ways to sell you stuff. You understand? So it's not that. The point is that you're profit-oriented, and you have four areas to apply it. That's all.
Four areas means?
You don't read Gita much. Taking care of cows, taking care of land, trade, banking. Okay? We have to. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Pranayanti.